Welcome to In Media Less, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today we're going to do something a little special here. I came up with an idea. We're going to see how well it works. Val has no idea what the heck this is going to be, but we're going to be talking about the Adventure Zone balance arc. But full disclosure that neither of us has re-listened to Balance. So I call this and I have an idea for what this is going to look like. And Val, when you were editing this, put in the sound of like someone slapping a stack of paper and pretend that I have a script and that like I know what I'm doing.
Sure.
She's not going to do that. She's going to leave in just me explaining that rather than putting in that sound effect because it's funnier. But I call this Memories of Balance.
Okay.
Why? What was that? This sounded very agonized.
So I forgot we were recording today, even though we like talked about it yesterday.
Yes.
And I got home from work like okay. And I got home from work like 30 minutes ago, and then I get a message from you and I was like, oh my god, I start panicking.
You could have said no. You could have said let's do a different time.
I start panicking because I don't know what we're doing. So I asked Chloe what was the plan. And she's like, we're doing Taz Balance. And she didn't tell me anything else. She just says, I have a plan, nothing else. So here we are. So it's going to be a surprise for me, just like it is for you, listener.
Yeah. So what I want to do today, because I feel like Balance, both you and I have listened to it. And I think it, in a lot of ways, informed a lot of like how we play role-playing games and how we think about media and like what we think of as like a good D&D story. And I want to just think about our memories of it and reminisce about Balance, because I think there's still a lot of things that just live rent-free in my brain, and we're just going to see what comes to the top when we I came up with a list of kind of questions. Oh, don't hit my table. That's not good sound design. Just slamming my fist on the table, just saying like, God dang it, Val, you're going to give me the answers I want to know about Balance or else. Okay. This is going well so far. So my first question for you is, were you a fan of the McElroys before... I should describe what Balance is first. The Adventure Zone is a podcast. It's done by the McElroy brothers and their dad. And it started off from their other podcast, Great Chip Sound Effect Bag.
I'm taking Dice. Tylenol because I have a massive headache. Okay. Sorry, continue.
Let's make her headache worse. I don't know why I'm in like a manic mood. It's because I just woke up, I guess.
It's great.
Okay, so it's... three brothers and their dad playing D&D. It started off, they had another podcast called My Brother and Me. I think they started playing D&D. The first Adventure Zone was just because of like a reward incentive for a donation goal or something. And then they had fun doing it, so they kept doing it. And they started off just running the basic intro to 5th edition adventure, which is Lost Mines of Phandelver or whatever. But Griffin pretty quickly took it off the rails. And it went on, how many episodes did it end up being? I've got the wiki.
I think like 100 something.
Well, if you count just straight story episodes, it was 69, because of course it was. But if you include like lunar episodes and whatnot, it looks like there was, and bonus episodes and whatnot, it was more than that.
Oh, I'm thinking of NADPOD as having like a little over 100.
Yeah.
Or 800, I think they had exactly 100. I like 69 better.
Yep.
Continue.
and it was broken into 8 arcs, which I feel like very, very widely in quality. And like I love Balance, but I can be the first to admit that like some of these are very difficult to listen to now, which we can talk about. But
I'm curious as to what makes you say that.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I don't have like that great of a memory of it.
Okay. Well, we start, like the first one starts with a very simple, like, goblins in the dungeon, and there's a drow and the manipulating things, and it ends with this kind of epic
Brian
space.
I remember Brian.
Magic Brian, and the spider's also named Brian. but then ends with this epic like fantasy space saga thing. I don't remember. I do remember, but
yeah, it does.
Yeah,
we're on a great
against
track.
Against this like nameless Lovecraftian horror called The Hunger.
Well, yeah. Didn't he have a name?
John.
It's always John.
Oh, it's great. Sorry, someone just rang my doorbell. I'll be right back.
Chloe went to answer her doorbell, and I'm here alone with my thoughts, and hope I don't leave this in, but I might. Man, I should look up what The Adventure Zone is about and read it while Chloe's gone, but
No, you should not.
I'm too lazy to cheat.
And you should absolutely leave that part in. I heard everything.
Was
it? It was my cat food delivery.
Okay, important. Yeah, did you hear everything?
Yes, I sure did.
Oh God. Okay. Cool.
I didn't take my headset. I was just going to get the door. You think I was going to take my headset off?
I don't know. Mine is wired. I keep forgetting that yours is wireless.
So, sorry. I just got to the part on the wiki where Griffin apparently chose the name John, but he does not want this to discourage people from drawing him like John Arbuckle. Arbuckle.
Who's that?
It's, oh my God, Val. How do you not know Garfield lore?
Oh, okay. Well, John, I'm sorry, is I'm an Garfield's immigrant. Owner.
Yeah, but I feel like Garfield is transcendent. Like, people not who really. Are listening to this, write in and tell us about how Garfield transcends culture. Garfield is the immortal being that society revolves around.
The first time I've heard about him was when I moved to the United States.
Okay, well, I know Garfield is big in the Middle East because they had that Garfield Eats app that I read about in Dubai.
Okay. Are you sure it wasn't Garfield the warlock?
I mean, I thought Garfield the Deal's warlock and Garfield the cat were the same person.
But yeah, I guess.
Legally distinct for legal reasons.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Let's continue.
So I'm going to start with this question, which is, did you listen to My Brother and Me before The Adventure Zone? Okay. So how did you find out about The Adventure Zone?
I'm not sure. I think I just started listening to Critical Role. I just started watching it. I've seen a lot of GIFs and like little videos on Tumblr. And I was very, very new.
Impressive that they make GIFs of a podcast.
Well, it was because they stream Critical Role. They do YouTube.
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, you were making a goof and I messed it up.
Because The Adventure Zone was not.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I think at some point I was just like a little tired of Critical Role. So I started looking for podcasts. And this is probably the top podcast at the time. So I just started listening to it. I will say, at first, I had no idea who they were. So their voices really startled me, because they have very distinct voices.
Okay.
And that is like my first memory of it. I turned it on and I was like, oh, okay. They are all related. And I think I just listened to the whole thing in like 2 or 3 months.
Okay. Which so you started listening after it was all done?
I think it was just finishing up. I'm not sure. I feel like I've waited for quite a few episodes.
So I think you and I got into it about the same time then, because I started listening right as the final story, which I guess is called Story and Song. I think the reason I started listening to it was because they made the announcement of the final episodes, and that's when I found out about it.
Gotcha.
So that would have been mid-2017.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, probably around the same time. Yeah. But we didn't know each other at that time.
No. I didn't meet you until
2018. We were just perfectly in sync.
2019, something like that.
Yeah. Either 18 or 19.
One of those years.
Yeah.
Look
at us.
Okay. Yeah.
Liking the same things.
Yeah. It's almost like we're friends. Okay,
so
let me then ask you this, because the first episode is, like, the McElroys have even said that they think the first episode isn't very good. So what made you stick it out?
I really liked how loose they were with the rules immediately. Yeah. Because Critical Role is pretty strict about it. They're, like, very technical. And it was extremely refreshing to have something that was just, like, so off the cuff. So loosey-goosey. And I was mostly listening to it while I was driving, or, like, at the time, my job was just a lot of me staring at documents and recording information. I was helping with billing, things like that. So it was just, like, a bunch of numbers. I didn't need my brain for it. So it was just, like, a really fun podcast to listen to while I was bored out of my mind. So that is why I enjoyed it personally. It was just a new experience for a newbie D&D enthusiast. What about you?
I guess unlike you, who had some Critical Role experience, this was actually the first ever, like, actual play podcast I ever listened to.
Oh, okay.
Or show, I guess. Yeah, so, like, I had never listened to any kind of actual play before. And, like, I think that was also, I had heard of Critical Role, and I'd heard of, I don't know, some of the other, there's some other big names that I don't remember off the top of my head. The one with the guy from, who wrote Borderlands 2.
Dungeons and Daddies?
Yes.
She's Anthony talking about Birch. Anthony Birch.
Anthony yep. Birch. The guy who wrote Borderlands 2. You know.
Ashley Birch's brother.
Yeah, Ashley.
The woman that Chloe is in love with.
I'm not in love with her. But if the she was the single woman whose and work... if she wanted to date me. anyway.
I'm leaving that in because I've embarrassed myself. So okay. much on this podcast.
I don't care. I don't care. I'm going to shoot my shot. yeah. And so I guess I checked out. I remember it was because, so I was listening to My Brother and Me, or I should just say Mabibam, which is what they just call it. Mabibam before that. And I liked the McElroys, and then they made some reference to it. And I don't remember what. And I was like, I should just check that out. And I put it on one day. And I remember I was crossing the Triborough Bridge, and it was the part where Taco was introducing his character as wanting to learn how to invent the taco. And just, like, something about it just, like, hit me that day. And I just, like, was trying to not die of laughter at this character, this stupid wizard who just wanted to invent tacos. And even though the rest of that episode was pretty, I don't know, it's an interesting, because, like, I think some parts of it are pretty good, but other parts of it, like, yeah, they have no idea what they're doing. Merle and Taco use, like, 30 spell slots as level one characters, and nothing makes any sense. And Griffin, like, hand waves, like, I don't know, like, the bugbear battle, because it's clear that Griffin just doesn't want to do it. And there's all these things where it's just, like, it's so, you know, it's so clear that, like, they're just goofing around and not really taking this too seriously. And I guess it works really well. Mm-hmm. And then what's really fascinating is that they manage to take this goofy mess of a thing. It starts cohering into this really good story as it goes on. That's the thing. It didn't start on these, like, solid foundations. It started as this stupid one-shot with these stupid characters who were super one-dimensional. And then it got more and more just, like, I don't know how they did it. Because I feel like one of the big kind of things that I struggle with when I've taken a one-shot into, like, a multi-session arc is that, like, you kind of, in a one-shot, you make every character and kind of very one-dimensional because you have to, because no one's going to remember them, so they need to have, like, a trait. So, like, that person you meet is, like, super cowardly, and that's their whole quality, because otherwise no one's going to remember. But, like, they took all these characters who were, like, just goofball, one-dimensional things, and every character gets very good character development. I mean, yeah. some more than other, like, I will say, like, I don't know, I feel like Merle remains Merle throughout the show, I feel like.
Yeah, but he's their dad.
Yeah, and it works, because he's kind of he's the center. I mean, I know he switches, like, domains between the first arc and the second, and he becomes, like, that hippie domain, nature domain cleric, yeah. And then kind of plays that up, but Taco and Magnus both go through so much.
I know, it's really awesome.
Okay, so really I'm going to pose a question. I have my list of questions here. Sound effect, tapping the script. What is your favorite arc?
My favorite arc is the last one.
Okay, interesting. Story and so the end.
Where the it's end, just... yeah, where okay. everything is coming together.
Okay.
I also do like the Crystal Kingdom, even though I don't remember any of it. I remember zero of what happens in it. I just know that the music was fire.
I do. Yeah, that's the other thing we should mention is the music.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Griffin does.
I feel like, yes, yes. I feel like I'm giving you this time to talk now.
Thank you. So I really like the last arc because it ties everything together. It also feels like that's the arc where Griffin takes a lot of these plot holes and kind of fixes them. And I don't know if I would actually call it plot holes, but just like he started this story from nothing, making it up as he goes along. And then he developed it, as we already mentioned, into this huge, awesome arc. And I don't know, like a lot of it felt like he had a plan for most of it, but he didn't have the end game. At least while I was listening to the arcs, I was always like, oh, okay, he's going to figure it out later. But he, oh boy, did he figure it out. And I really enjoyed kind of, I mean, spoilers, but I really love how we see Loop in the past and that we actually encountered her body. I mean, Barry, all of those characters coming back and being recontextualized in this really fun way that fits the whole story. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think they actually switch away from D&D from in the last arc.
They do. They well, no, you're thinking of the Stolen Century, which is the second to last arc.
Which that's right. And then they switch back.
Which uses power by the apocalypse. Yeah, it uses, I forget exactly which one. Or maybe it was just their own little homebrew thing. But
regardless, like that switch and then them going into the ultimate showdown and wrapping everything up. And the stakes growing from just, like, this world to being the universe and all its iterations. I don't know, something about that was just so epic. It was such an excellent way to end the series that I was just mind blown. And once again, like, that is one of the first podcasts or just, like, any D&D real play that I've listened to or interacted with. So for me, this was like, oh my god. So yeah, last one for me.
Okay.
What about you, Dr. Chloe?
I love the 11th Hour. I think I like it so much. It's like a Majora's Mask or Groundhog's Day style, like, time loop arc.
Oh, that's the one where they do, like, that locker for the miners.
Yeah, puzzle. Yeah, it's basically like a puzzle where they have to do the day perfectly. They have to do a perfect final. The final loop has to be like perfect, and they have to like do everything perfectly so that they can close the loop essentially, and not all die. And I just thought that was so well done. Like, it's so hard to do a repeating time loop well in, like, I think, and it's not hard to do it in a story setting. It's hard to do it in a game where it, like, works for the, like a D&D for like, all the players. Because part of the problem with doing that sort of arc, I can speak from my experience as a DM who's done it before, is that your players want to feel like they're having an impact on the world and that they are, you know, making progress forward. And yet the whole point of that kind of arc is that you're resetting everything back to square one over and over again. And so it's really difficult to have that sense of, like, narrative and character growth when everything's just getting reset over and over again. And I think Griffin nailed it. It worked really well. It was interesting to listen to. That's the other thing that could have been bad. It's like, oh god, here they go. They're stuck on this loop again. They don't know what's going on. And it could have overstayed its welcome. But I think Griffin did a really excellent job keeping it moving. I don't remember. I remember it was they had 60 minutes, and I don't remember if like they like kept to that time in real life, like if it was like strict about it. I'm seeing by the episode lengths that maybe, you know, it was more like 70 minutes, but like still, I think it was well done. To me, that's the peak, the pinnacle of the balance arc.
Just because of the mechanics and like the real life consequences.
I like that. And yeah, it was definitely the part that I was most like sitting on the edge of my seat listening to it. Like that was the part, like that was the peak for me. I mean, like Crystal Kingdom, which you mentioned, was also excellent. Although I do think the Crystal Kingdom and the Suffering Game, which kind of sandwich in the 11th Hour, are both much darker.
Oh my god, yeah.
Stories, whereas the 11th Hour is a bit goofier.
I mean, Noelle, that reveal shattered me. I was at work, and I was just a broken husk of a human when they revealed who that little robot is.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, even now thinking about it, it like gets so sad. Oh boy.
Oh my god. yeah, I mean, definitely the 11th Hour for me. Okay, now my next question was the opposite, which was your least favorite arc, if you have one.
Let me actually just open the wiki and take a look at which arcs there.
I'm going to send this to you right now so that you have it, because then we'll be on the same page, literally.
I got it. I'm on the, I mean, the train one was okay.
How dare you? I love the train one.
I just don't remember it. I like that they met, what's his name? Angus?
Angus McDonald, boy detective.
Mm-hmm. Love that kid.
Who turned out to be like an ancient dragon or something?
I don't think so.
Didn't he turn out to be? He turned out to be something.
I think he was just a very special young man.
Okay. I thought it was implied that he was. Or are you pulling my chain?
I don't remember.
Because he could cast like 6-level spells. Or something. Didn't he cast some like high-level spell at some point?
Probably. Gosh. But I think he's just like.
Okay.
Super OP. Regardless, we'll look that up in a moment.
Yeah, okay. Well, technically unconfirmed, Griffin did express a particular fondness towards the fan theory that Angus was actually a silver dragon in disguise the whole time.
Okay, so it's a fan theory, probably with a lot of stuff supporting it.
Yes,
but most likely accidentally.
It's probably just something that a fan invented to explain why Angus seemed to like know everything and also cast high level magic.
Okay, honestly, I cannot pick one that I don't like. I really enjoyed all of them. I think mostly because of their humor and how, like, cohesive they were as a unit. Them being rowdy.
rowdy. But we're on a reality TV show, and your competitors are the 8 story arcs, and you have to vote one of them off the island. Which one do you vote off the island, Val?
Oh, God. Okay. You can't do this to me.
I can totally do this to you.
Oh, I'll do Murder on the Rockport.
Okay.
I love the other ones just a little bit more than I like this one, which I really liked it.
Okay.
Because it has so many cool characters. Yeah. Well, now that I voted it off, it'll go on a different reality TV where you'll be able to leave it in.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to come back for the, like, I don't know, every 10 years they do the, like, special reunion where the, like, people who were, like, fan favorites get a second chance. That's where it will go to.
Yeah. And we jump forward in time, and now you're on the show.
Yeah.
Who would you vote off, and why?
I'm going to be controversial here. You're not going to like this.
Mm-hmm.
The Stolen Century.
How dare you!
Here's what I will say about it. I think the content of it is good. I just take some issues with the presentation. I think the switch to the Powered by the Apocalypse system, they weren't as creative with it, I think, at times.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of the reason if I remember correctly, I think what happened was that someone made the system, like, bespoke system for them. And then I think they felt like they had to stick to the rules that that person had given. Like, if I remember correctly, I think there was an episode where Griffin's like, so we met with the creator of this and they talked us through it. And I feel like maybe they felt obligated to not be as fast and loose with the rules because of that. Maybe. And I feel like compared to the other arcs, the Stolen Century feels a little more painting within the lines compared to the other arcs, which is not to say, again, I think what we learn in it is really good. And there's some very beautiful moments. My problem with it is that it doesn't coalesce. It doesn't have the, like, super strong, like, bullet point, like, summary that just, like, catches you like the other arcs do. Like, you can't just say, like, the Suffering Game, they're playing awful Price is Right, or the Love Hour, where it's just, it's Groundhog Day, or Crystal Kingdom, where it's like, they're in a bad Candyland lab, you know, Pedals to the Metal, which is like, this is a Fast and Furious movie, or Murder Mystery, Here There Be Gerblins, it's just like, yeah, this is the start, and then, I don't know, the Stolen Century is just like, here is a ton of backstory. Like, this is all backstory, and it's going to be a lot of different moments, and it ties together. I don't want to say it doesn't tie together, but it's all over the place, and I don't feel like it's as strong thematically or as narratively as the other arcs. That being said, I don't think it's bad. Like, if someone's listening to this right now, like, oh, I should skip that, then don't skip it.
Oh, no, definitely don't.
I just don't think I was as invested in it as I was the other arcs.
One of my favorite moments is from that arc.
What is your favorite moment?
Well, that was going to be my question for you.
Okay.
I'll tell you after you tell me yours. It's my turn to ask the question.
Okay.
Singular question that I have.
My favorite moment. There's several that, like, come to mind. Okay, the one where Griffin... okay, it's just getting spoiled, but, like, whatever. We're going to have a spoiler warning in the beginning. We got better. When Barry Blue Jeans is coming back to life and Griffin starts by describing his jeans.
Okay.
I was on the M60 bus and I was cackling. People were looking at me like I was nuts. Like, I don't know why the idea of describing these jeans was so hilarious, but it was just like, of course, what else would you describe about a man named Barry Blue Jeans? And then the part where Loop, like, they're about to leave on the voyage, and Loop takes the microphone and says, Greg Gamaldas, you owe me whatever dollars. Again, another just brilliant moment. When Loop kind of reappears as well, I guess alongside Barry, also excellent. Yeah, those are the moments that come to mind. I mean, the Suffering Game, I have mixed feelings about it, but I feel like the part where the game is introduced, I was really invested in it. I wasn't so invested in the game itself, but I just have that very stuck image of, like, it was those twins who were basically supposed to be Jesse and James from Pokemon.
Yep.
And I love them.
They're really great.
In our campaign, I told Dan that he needed to play two characters like they were Jesse and James from Pokemon because of them. He did a really good job.
They were great. And we had that Kenku as the cat. I don't know. What is it? Meow? I don't know.
Yeah, Kenku. The Kenku who is Meowth. Yeah. So, okay. That was me listing off like 10 different moments, but now it's your turn.
Okay, so I have two. I'm going to start with the silly one, and it is, of course, the flaming, poisoning, raging Sword of Doom.
How can I forget? When they freaking get that item, the something of blah, 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 that allows them to trade it for the sword.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And you just...
It was Justin, right?
Yeah, it was Justin.
And he set it up. He bought it in the... Like, he bought the item. And then he let everyone else discuss and talk and, like, distract Griffin. And then he set his plan into motion, and he got the most OP weapon that was ever created, which was supposed to be unattainable, but Griffin goofed. Beautiful moment. If anyone wants to listen to it, it is... let's see.
Well, it...
Episode 50. So it was available from episode 28, and at episode 50, don't know the timestamp, because I'm on the wiki.
Okay.
But that's when Taco bought the thing.
And, okay. And the joke of the story was that it was made by, like, a little kid, right? Who submitted it to the show.
A little kid made it, submitted it. It was and then Griffin, insanely powerful.
Yeah, Griffin priced it at something that they would never be able to afford as a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And then Taco did that thing. Okay, it was called the Slicer of Tapir Weir Isles.
Yeah.
I don't... Okay, what is that? Is that like a joke on some... It's a... Oh, here it is. A pun of Tupperware.
Oh, Tupperware.
The Slicer of Tupperware Isles.
Okay, that's silly.
It's a pun of Tupperware. You know how they sell you those things like they're going to change your life and they just sit up in your cabinets using dust, collecting dust. Okay, so that was the joke, was that it was like... like sales pitch item. Okay. I just remember, yeah, Taco does that amazing thing of buying it and then he doesn't do anything with it, right?
I think he used it once, maybe.
Yes, here it is. Taco immediately put it on his back as an ornament with no intention of using it, much to the dismay of everybody else. Yeah.
So he's like never actually used it in battle. They do trade it in later. It's very important. They're trying to get Magnus back. But like that is my favorite silly moment. My favorite, like, character moment and story moment more so is when actually in the Stolen Century, when they're going back through everything that happened and how they ended up in Phandalin, it's when they're starting to forget and Barry is telling Taco, like, what to do, and he mentions Loop, and Justin improvises and goes, who? Do you remember that moment?
Yeah.
Like he plays into forgetting. And even now, I just got goosebumps. Because that was so perfectly placed. And I think even Griffin was like, whoa.
Yeah.
So that is the moment that I remember the most. I also... Okay. So I'm just going to switch gears a little bit here.
Okay.
Because there is a reason that this is on the podcast.
Yes, I was about to switch to the queerness. That was also.
Yeah.
What queer character do you want to talk about first? There's many.
There are a lot. I think we have two pairs of lesbians.
Yeah, we've got Sloane and Hurley, as well as Killian and...
Love Killian.
Who was Killian's...
The little,
Carrie Fang Battle.
Yeah, Carrie, that's right.
Yeah.
We also have Taco and his boyfriend, Death.
Yes. And literally the incarnation of Death.
The Grim Reaper. And
whose name was Istis? Was that Istis? No, Istis was the god of fate. What was the... Kravitz.
Kravitz, that's right.
Kravitz. And everyone drew him as Lenny Kravitz.
And we have Loop. Who's a trans woman. Who do you want to talk about first? Because I have favorites.
Okay, let's start with your favorite.
Well, Loop, of course. Yeah. She is a chaotic woman.
Yes.
She's just really insanely chaotic. And I love her. That's my thoughts on her.
Yeah.
You may proceed.
I hope she got her money back from Grey Grimaldus eventually.
I bet she did. Otherwise, she would have beaten him up.
Yeah, I really like Loop. So, like, she becomes a lich, which is really cool. I always like when characters become undead, but they're not evil, because it's, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's
like, so, when you say lich, I'm thinking evil. But
yeah.
She's cool.
And then she was the umbrella for a while that Taco had.
Yeah.
And
I also appreciate that Griffin didn't go with his first idea for her name, which was supposed to be Chalupa.
Oh, yeah.
Because Taco. I don't remember if
Griffin confirmed that was the original joke. But Griffin thought the name might be construed as racially insensitive. It is now canonically not short for anything.
Yeah, so I really like that. I don't remember where he said it, if he said it on the podcast at some point, or maybe like in some other thing.
It was on the Adventure Zone Zone, which was their podcast where they would reflect on the show, which I never listened to because I wanted to go back and listen to it at some point, but I don't like listening to creators discuss their work while I'm in the middle of it.
We are not the same.
Okay. Well, it depends. Like, I don't know. There's something about it where I was just like, I feel like sometimes it would ruin some of the magic to hear them talk about it. Like, one of my favorite games is Disco Elysium.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a game that, first of all, everyone in this entire world should play. And second of all, it's kind of a game that's all about what you don't know. And
mm-hmm.
I have seen where people have done like interviews with the people who made it, or like, you know, YouTube videos about it, or, you know, talking about how to like do the perfect playthrough. I will never look at any of that, because for some reason in my mind that will just cheapen the game. I had my version of it that mm-hmm. existed in my brain that I played through, and that is the version that I want to remember, and I don't want it to be spoiled. I want like this death of the mm-hmm. author. Like, I don't want to be spoiled to what they wanted me to take away from things. But that's not always true, because like we did the interview with Seth Dickinson, and I was like all about it because I wanted mm-hmm. to know what he thought about some of the stuff when he like made it. So it's not always true. It's just true
it
for
depends
some
on
things.
The story, yeah.
And it's true for balance, where it's just like, I don't really want to know what the McElroys were thinking when they came up with my favorite moments, because it's better for me for it to be a mystery. But you seem to disagree.
So as a huge fan of NADPOD, I religiously listen to whatever episode is out, and then I go to their, like, their secondary kind of Talking Dead, podcast where they talk about that episode specifically, and, like, I always alternate. I tend not to skip those where they just discuss the episode. I forget what they call it. Hold on, let me see.
The NADPOD pod. I don't know.
It is. Man, I don't know. Hold on, let me. Okay. Sorry for wasting time. But
yeah, how
now
dare
I'm just
you?
Very curious.
I have
about
plans
this.
With our friend Lee, and you need to hurry up now.
Oh, what are you doing with Lee?
We're playing Diablo 4 at 5 o'clock.
Of course. Yeah. Oh, it's called The Short Rest. I forgot.
Oh, my God. That's a
short
good name
and sweet.
For.
Yep.
Oh, that's a good name.
And they basically. We need to do an episode about NADPOD, by the way, and I don't want it to be one of those where I tell you about it, because I think you're going to actually really, really like it.
Wait, is NADPOD the one I started listening to and then gave up, kind of?
I don't know. I suggest listening to Campaign 2 first. It's
right.
Unrelated.
Okay. We're going to do this. I will start it when I like to sit there on my sofa and listen to podcasts and play video games, so maybe that's what I will do. Maybe when I come back from vacation.
Yeah. And their second one is fairly short.
Okay.
Let me actually just let you know. It's only 41 episodes.
Jesus.
Relatively short.
you and your friends and like not having a concept of what short media is, apparently.
Look, compared to Critical Role with their like 10,000 hours. And
oh
even,
my God.
You know. I don't think it's actually 10,000. But anyway, back to the Adventure Zone.
Yes.
What were we talking about? I don't remember.
We were talking about Loop, and then now we're going to talk about Killian and Carrie Fang Battle, who...
As we should. Killian
great.
Is awesome.
Yes.
She's a big orc lady. Is she
yep.
an orc? Yeah.
She's an orc. She half orc and orc. No, she's an orc. She starts off very gruff, but... I think that's true of most of the characters. Starts off very gruff, but, like, you learn she has a heart of gold.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, oh, and I didn't realize that she got married to Carrie.
Yeah, they had, like, rings in the end, in, the like, the final arc or something.
I totally missed that. And I remember they're on a team with Noelle.
Mm-hmm. Noelle
okay,
is apparently her cousin-in-law.
I'm loving the wedding fan art. Also, this art that just has Killian wearing a shirt that just says Butch.
Because she absolutely is. Oh, yeah, I remember that. I really like that artist. When I was really into Balance, like, that's one of my favorite arts.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite arts. So, yeah, Carrie and Killian are great. I don't know what else there is to say about them. And then
I don't think much about their relationship. Yeah,
I think doesn't Magnus encourage Carrie to ask Killian out at some point?
I think so. But Magnus is like a very soft boy and he's just always encouraging. So it sounds like probably something he would do. Okay.
Episode 40, Carrie teaches some lessons to Magnus in the ways of thievery and sweet flips. As payment, Magnus helps her carve a wooden duck puzzle box for Killian. He also gives Carrie a rosewood rose ring, also crafted for Killian, to put in said box.
That's adorable. I don't remember that.
Yeah.
That was Magnus.
Yes. Okay, so that's one couple. The other one is Sloan and Hurley.
And that made me sad.
But they don't, actually, okay.
Yeah,
they don't die.
Yeah, but I was actually kind of like super annoyed at that at the time when I was listening. I don't know, I just, this couple who one was corrupted and then the other one spent the whole arc trying to rescue her. And then they do, and she ends up like, and Hurley, who's been fighting for Sloane, trying to get her to, you know, be free of this curse, ends up being fatally poisoned. And the only way to not, for either of them not to die, was to, like, transform themselves into this intertwined tree. And, I mean, later, I think they become
dryads.
Yeah, like, creatures again that are able to live and act. But at the time, I was so pissed off. I don't know. When was this? I don't know.
What do you mean? When it was in the second arc?
Yeah, I think around that third time.
Arc, sorry.
No, I mean, like, I mean, like, within the context of time in our real life.
2015.
I think around that time, there was just, like, a few queer shows that did something sketchy. And, like, I was listening to this at the time. Or maybe I was finishing a different podcast that had, like, the queer character who basically, like, didn't get any happiness in her life. But I'm not going to say what the podcast was.
This
but,
was like, shortly before the 100 season 3.
Yeah, it wasn't that. I know I wasn't. Because then I would have, like, taken a break from this podcast, I feel like.
Yeah.
I think I was listening to a different podcast, and there was a queer character, and, like, the person she was in love with never reciprocated her feelings, and, like, I think died or something. And it was very, like, prolonged, and the show kind of ended with that. It wasn't, like, she wasn't the main focus of the show, but, like, I still had that kind of, like, you know, emotionally thinking about that. And then this happened. I was like, God damn it. Come on. Can I say that? I don't know.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. So I think at the time I was so annoyed. It was a beautiful scene, but, like, I was like, no, have them win. This isn't winning. This is settling. But it got fixed later, which I like. It's one of the few times that I like when, like, creators kind of shift towards kind of, like, what the viewers, listeners, patrons like.
Yeah.
I usually don't like when, like, creators kind of bend to that. Because it opens a lot of doors where the show just, like, degrades. But this is one of the few cases where I'm like, yeah, good job, Griffin. Listen to us, please. So I really like, I think out of, like, all the queer couples, this one left the most, like, emotional imprint on me. Like, it was a really cool story. I really liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chloe, tell me about Taco and Kravitz.
Okay, so Taco and Kravitz are good. Now, I'm trying to remember how they meet. It's because it's during the 11th hour, I believe, where Kravitz shows up and talks to the gang and basically says, like, hey, we need to collect your souls. You've racked up quite the debt, right? And then Taco is immediately taken by Kravitz, and I don't remember how it, like, I don't remember how Taco asks Kravitz out, but they, I remember they go on a date to...
Was it like a wine tasting or something?
Yeah, it was... Okay, here it is. It's called the Chug and Squeeze.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, and then they... I don't know, then they start dating, I guess. I don't know, they're just a good couple, and... In the Balance finale, that's when they officially are going to date and go... Oh, and Taco takes Kravitz to Killian and Carrie's wedding.
Mm-hmm. I think out of all of the queer relationships we have, they are the most substantial just because
it's one of Taco the main characters. Is
a yeah. queer character. But also, yeah. like, they have a lot of interactions.
Yeah.
Don't they fight him at some point, or am I misremembering?
I don't remember if they... He's definitely presented as an antagonist as first. I don't remember if they fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's definitely a threat at first, because he's there to collect their souls.
Yeah. I just remember that I really, really liked when he showed up, because he kind of showed up, was just very, very soft around Taco, and then he would just kind of go on his way.
Yeah.
They're just sillies.
Yeah.
Okay, and okay. I guess last but definitely not least is Loop and Barry.
Yes.
I don't know. It's just such a weird pairing.
Yeah.
But I literally cannot imagine them with anyone else. Literally, like, there's no other choice. Like, of course, this is the pairing.
Yeah. They both become liches. Barry is all about his genes.
Well, Barry is all about Loop.
And Loop.
And then his jeans are second priority.
I like the canonically that Barry Blue Jeans resembles the actor Tom Arnold.
Yeah. Griffin does a lot of these. Yeah. I feel like every character we go to, he like gives a real life equivalent. It's kind of silly. I like that running joke.
Yeah. And Tom Baudet in the murder arc.
Yeah. Just, like, very obscure references.
Tom Baudet is not an obscure reference. You take that back.
So unknown and oh my just God. Impossible to know how, in the moment.
How dare you? Okay. We're running out of time. Yes. So I think there's the final question that we have to discuss, mm-hmm. which is... why we don't listen to the Adventure Zone anymore.
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay, yeah.
So Balance Arc ended, and there were other, you know, campaigns that followed. You know, the next one after it was Commitment. This was the one where the dad, Clint, was the DM, or the Game Master, I guess the GM. And they were playing, like, superheroes.
Well, I thought, oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And then that one, I think it didn't really, I don't know, it didn't feel like, it was very short. It didn't really feel to go anywhere. Then we had third campaign, which is Amnesty.
Which I liked for the most part. It had, like, its moments. It wasn't the strongest. But here's the thing, like, Griffin set up a world with a story that was extremely difficult to beat.
Yes, that's the problem. This is the problem. Like, there's nothing wrong with them. It's just that Griffin set such a high watermark with mm-hmm. the first campaign. It's really difficult to, like, beat it. And I think they, you know, like, I'm kind of glad that they haven't been trying to, like, I don't know, get, maybe they're just doing their own thing now, but, like, not trying to live up to the highs of the first arc, but... Yeah, it was tough. And the current one is Steeplechase, which I guess is, people are saying is pretty good, actually. I was going to check
it
out.
It looks interesting. I've literally never heard about it, but I'm just looking at
the
wiki.
They're in a, like, theme park.
Oh, okay.
But it's like a murder theme park, I'm guessing. And it's Justin GMing. And they're using Blades in the Dark. Do you know about that system?
No, what is that?
Have you heard of a book series from the 80s called The Black Company?
No.
Okay, so Blades in the Dark is... I was hoping to pull up the website, but it is giving me a fun little error message.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. Yeah, this cool, like, deprecated code thing is going on. Uh-oh. Blades in the Dark, fix your Drupal install. but it's a... So the Black Company was basically this story. It's about, like, a plucky band of mercenaries facing overwhelming odds. And Blades in the Dark is meant to, like, capture that. That, like, you know, you are a small gang of kind of plucky rogues facing overwhelming odds. And it's supposed to capture that idea of, like, always being the underdog. Mm-hmm. Like, even as you get more powerful, like, the idea is that, like, you are never going to defeat your enemies in a one-on-one fight. Like, they will destroy you. You have to be very careful and secretive, and it's all about plotting and plans and putting those plans into action. So I am interested to see it, and I should listen to it at some point.
Yeah, I think I'd be definitely down to listen to it.
Yeah, so maybe we'll... Maybe in a year's time, we will come back to this and be like, let's talk about Taz Steeplechase and we'll talk about how it's so good. But yeah. Until then, any final thoughts about The Adventure Zone Balance?
No, because now I can think about is NADPOD and how every single campaign so far was just really, really good.
Okay. All I can think about is turning my air conditioner back on. I am overheating.
Hi, overheating. I'm Dad. And with that thought, Chloe, we have a bunch of stuff.
Okay. I don't know why I'm in the sound effects mood today, but I am.
What's the sound effect that I have to add?
Wait, you didn't hear it?
No.
You're going to hear it when you have to edit the Audacity recording.
Okay.
So Zoom noise cancellation must have gotten it. I made a fart sound.
Oh,
while nice. While you were making fun of me. So, speaking of podcasts and the social media that is thereof attached to, what? I don't know what I'm saying. I'm hot.
Hi, hot. I'm Dad.
No. No. Okay. We have a Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest is @InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez. And our Tumblr is...
ThePodInMediaLez.tumblr.com. Which, by the way, I forgot to tell you, but we have a few recommendations from a buddy of mine on there. Sam, she's great.
Geez. Oh, geez.
She recommended a few books, and we've actually already done a few. Oh, so like we know what? So she recommended Dreadnought and and something else that we've done.
You should recommend that she actually listen to our podcast.
I know, I did.
Okay. Good. Our website is inmedialez.com. You can email us at inmedialez@gmail.com. There's a link in the description to our Discord server. Please join us and... you know, give us our recommendations.
It's just Chloe roasting me the whole time.
It is. I roast Val a lot. Like, if you think I roast her on this podcast ever, you haven't seen anything.
She holds back on the Discord as well.
It's hard. I have to, like...
She has to be polite in company.
Yeah, I have to, like, pinch myself to just stop myself from saying what I really feel about Val.
I'm a very bullyable person, I've learned over the years.
Yeah. So any final thoughts? Any final message, Val?
No message. It's just I'm going to have to talk about how much of a bully target I am to my therapist.
So you're going to therapy?
I was going to say, first I have to get a therapist. But that's a problem for a later time, because we'll see you in the next one.
And may the Raven Queen bless you.
Nice.
Nailed it.